This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. It's the show that takes you behind the scenes and brings you the insight of coaches, players, and executives in the Boston sports realm. Appreciate you being with us. I am Chris Ryan. So we'll start here in the open by talking a little bit about the Boston Red Sox, who started the year at 0-3, swept away by the Baltimore Orioles, an embarrassing loss on Easter Sunday. And since then, they have won four straight games, three against the defending American League champion Tampa Bay Rays, and their last win on Thursday in the home opener for the Baltimore Orioles in Baltimore, exacting a measure of revenge against them as they defeated them 7-3. The big story on that day was Eduardo Rodriguez returning to the hill. As last season, Eduardo Rodriguez was unable to pitch at all. This as a result of first having COVID-19 and being so sick that he said he felt like he was 100 years old. After his battle with COVID, in doing tests, it was found out that he had developed myocarditis, which is a heart condition. And they were put in a circumstance where Rodriguez could not do anything. He was basically sedentary at home, unable to even leave his couch too much, to walk too much. And what's remarkable is we found him back on a major league mound some 8 months after that circumstance. And it was a special day for him. It was a special day for Alex Cora, for Christian Vasquez, who has caught Rodriguez more than anybody else. And the result was great in the fact that he won the game. The Red Sox came from behind and won 7-3. But just being out there was something that he found himself getting chills in the first inning. He said he felt like it was his first big league start. And he spoke with reporters after the game on Thursday.
I mean, when they told me right away that I had myocarditis, like my first question was that, like, how long this is going to take and if I'm going to be available to go back there and be normal, you know. But after they told me that it's going to be fine and just take care of it. And after that, I just started like take care of it and be available to get back here today.
How much of a focus was today during the whole process, the opportunity to get back on the mound, the opportunity to return to the Red Sox, and how did that get you through some of the, you know, the difficult moments of this process?
I mean, I will say the preparation, so it was normal, like a normal do on mine on every start. I just like I said, the only difference that I feel at all was on that first inning. Like when I went out there, I mean, I saw Mancini coming up and they give me the round of applause and all that, and he pointed straight to me and he went on his chest like, "You heart good?" And he went like that. And I went like, "Yeah." And you get two. And he said, "Yes." So after that first inning got on me a little bit. But after I get out of that inning, be available to be back to do everything normal. You know what I mean? But the only thing that I think changed a little bit was that first inning for me.
What did it mean to you to have Mancini, you know, make you a part of that, where they're honoring him for his battle with cancer? But he said, you know, we both had stuff we had to deal with.
I mean, it was a special that he remembered that I was having some issues too last year. You know what I mean? So I gave him hand time. He took it and he gave me that sign to me. So it was really special for me to see him back there too after everything he went through. So it just feels good. You know what I mean? Me and him being back and on the field again, it feels really good.
Did you expect to feel like you did in the first inning? Did you expect that you were going to have that type of, you know, emotion, like it was your first big league start? Did that catch you kind of off guard, or just kind of culminated to, you know, to that point?
I mean, I will say even AC told me go out there and enjoy the game. You know what I mean? And I was normal, like every time I was all the time from when I get to the ballpark all the way to and I step on the mound, I was feeling really fine. I was feeling normal, but then when I see the leadoff hitter, I started feeling those chills on my body, you know, and everything. But like I say, after the first inning, everything went back to normal.
For Rodriguez, he has developed into one of the top pitchers in baseball. And, you know, 2017 and 18, he was still a young pitcher at that point in time, 24, 25 years of age in those seasons. He had struggles with his command, where he just wouldn't trust his stuff and would nibble around the strike zone, walk too many guys, pitch count would be high, and sometimes he wouldn't even make it to the fifth inning. That all changed. I talked with Alex Cora about that, but first, you know, Cora reacted to Rodriguez perhaps being in the conversation as one of the comeback players of the year. So certainly it seems that Trey Mancini is going to win that, given the fact that he had stage 3 colon cancer. But certainly Rodriguez deserves a tremendous amount of credit, considering where he was and where he is now.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, you know, while everything was going on. And we made a point after he threw the first pitch to give him a standing ovation. People in the bullpen, everybody in the dugout, because I don't even know, you know, watching from afar and obviously staying in touch with him, checking on him to see if he was okay last year was tough. And like I said, I just told him, I said, what happened today is because of him. You know, he put the work, he put himself in this situation, and it was very gratifying.
Alex, in 18, you talked a lot about Eddie needing to challenge hitters, and you were on him a lot on a consistent basis in regards to that. At what point did you see that change with him, and how do you think that message got across eventually?
Game four of the World Series, he attacked that lineup like nobody else, right? Throwing fastballs up and changeups down. Everybody remembers the outcome, right? The home run, but I just remember a guy that has pitched the night before, right? Pitching game one, if I'm not mistaken, and we had to give him the ball, and we knew he was going to perform. And the way he attacked LA that night was amazing. I think from there on, he took off. And also that game in Port St. Lucie, where I still go back to that bat, it was two outs, Dominic Smith, 0-2 count, and he ended up walking him. And I made a point of, you know, hey, that can't happen. And it seems like, you know, since that time, that day on, he's been attacking, and you can see the
result. So as I mentioned, the Red Sox began the year at 0-3, and then they swept away the Tampa Bay Rays with a convincing win on Wednesday against them. And, you know, I asked Alex Cora, who's been very bullish on how good this team can be, if he needed to see results. I mean, he put the good lines out there, as did the rest of the team, but you know, losing your first three games at home to the Orioles was obviously not an optimal start to the season.
Alex, you've been consistent about what you think this team is and who you can be, but was it important to see results, not just for you, but for the group after, as you referenced, that feeling on Sunday, and to see not just one part of the game, but kind of everything come together in this series?
It's important. I'm not going to lie to you. After what happened Sunday, we played well Friday and Saturday. We just didn't hit. We had some chances to get the lead, but it didn't happen. But you know, Sunday was a tough one. But they show up, you know, the last 3 days, and they put complete games. You know, yesterday was an emotional one. Today was a lot better. You know, but they know they're good. They know it. But the key is that they know we have to show up every day. You know, I mean, it's not that, you know, we're going to show up and we're the Red Sox and we got you. You know, we have to show up every day, work on our craft, keep trying to get better defensively, running the bases, better at bats. And if we do that, we're going to be in good shape.
Okay.
After a very challenging 2020, and wasn't it for everybody, J.D. Martinez has had an incredibly strong start to 2021. Through his first seven games, he has 12 RBIs, hitting .433, 13 hits in 30 at-bats for J.D. Martinez. And he spoke with the media on Monday, which was a dark day for the Red Sox. They'd just gotten swept by the Baltimore Orioles, but he had been one of the bright spots. You could see that he was swinging the bat well. A lot of his mechanics had been restored to previous seasons prior to that 2020 contest. But many of his teammates, particularly younger teammates, were still not hitting at that point in time. Well, some have rebounded since then, and his notion was one that ended up being very prophetic: did not hit the panic button after three games.
For you personally, you obviously put in a lot of work in the offseason to get yourself in a good position to start the year. What has it felt like for you, and how have you thought about the way you've swung the bat so far? What's been going well?
Obviously I do a lot of work every day and stuff like that. I'm continuing to work. It's only been 3 days, 3 games. So just got to keep grinding. You know, it's a long season.
Did you feel like you needed to see results, or was the belief there that it was going to come back and you were going to hit the baseball the way that you know you can?
I feel like I look at myself and I look at my body and I go, I can still get into positions. Like, I'm still generating the power. It's just lining up all the things again, you know? And so I know it's always in there. It's just lining them up and getting them to sequence the right way again.
You had to go about counseling some of the guys that are struggling here early this season to make contact. Do you reach out to them? Do you wait for them to come to you? How do you go about creating an environment where, you know, they're getting information that you feel they need?
There's certain guys I feel comfortable going up to and talking, guys that are open. Other ones, you kind of just, it's only 3 games, guys. It's really 3 games. Means nothing. You go out there, you just, a lot more games to go, 159 more. So I think the important thing is not hitting the panic button on these guys and not being like, oh my gosh, I haven't hit in the first 3 days. Like, relax, it's fine. You know, there's still a long way to go. And, you know, I get with a couple guys. I talked to, you know, a couple guys yesterday about their swing and, you know, some things that I saw. So we'll see.
The Red Sox, J.D. Martinez right there. Let's switch gears to the Bruins. We'll get to the Celtics a little bit later. Bruins have won 3 consecutive games, this following their 4-2 win over the Washington Capitals on Thursday night, a game in which the Bruins played perhaps their strongest game of the year from start to finish in all aspects of the contest. Brad Marchand continues to impress in such a significant way, and we're going to get into kind of an appreciation of Brad Marchand in just a little bit. He had the game winner. It was a shorthanded goal. He had such poise on that play, driving the net from the left side, waiting for the defender to go down, shifting towards the middle with a toe drag towards the center, and then getting it past the netminder. He scored a similar goal on Tuesday night, same type of pause and poise. Brad Marchand is one of the best players in the National Hockey League, and he does so while getting the attention and asking for the attention of the opposition's best players on a nightly basis. He is an incredible, incredible hockey player at his peak at 32 years of age. Here is Brad Marchand.
Hey, Brad. Want to ask you a little bit about the poise on that shorthanded goal and generally overall that you have around the net. Is that something that's developed over time, or have you always had that in your game?
I think a lot of it I've kind of always had, but I think the biggest thing that really separates guys, you know, from the junior levels to college to the American League to the NHL, is being able to translate it to higher speeds. I think it might have just taken me a little bit of time to be able to do it at this level. But it's something I work a lot on too. I mean, always trying to improve our game. I think that's a big reason why we're a competitive team, is everyone in that room wants to get better every day, and we work towards that. So, you know, I think it's part of
you talk a little bit about how you guys
all working together.
Oh, sorry. Could you talk a little bit about how you guys met the challenge physically tonight against that group, whether it's on the back end or forwards? This is a team you want to meet that challenge, and it seemed like you guys were able to do that.
Yeah. All right. Now, this is a big week for our team. We're playing Wash a few times, we're playing Philly, a team obviously we're trying to catch, and a team we're trying to stay ahead of. So, this is the time. It's crunch time. You know, we have to continue to separate our teams from the separate from the teams below us, and we have to build towards playoffs regardless of who's in or out of lineup every night. We have a goal that we want to achieve, it's progression. We don't need to be great at the start of the year. It's how you finish, and I think we're building and get better at the right time.
Marchand, sixth in the National Hockey League with 47 points. That includes
19 goals. Jeremy Swayman, in his second start for the Boston Bruins, another strong performance as the main product has opened eyes with his poise, his excitement, and his ability to stop pucks.
Hey, Jeremy, just your mindset in the last couple of games, what it's been like to be an NHL netminder, to have these opportunities and to see it all kind of come to fruition.
I think my mindset doesn't change as far as wanting to win and do whatever I can to help my team win. But yeah, you said it best. I mean, an NHL, that's everything. And, you know, it's a big deal. And this team is obviously a really good one to be a part of. So I'm just enjoying every second I can while I can.
And that seems to be the key. Like, the camera cuts to you, you're smiling, you're engaged, you're playing good hockey, but you're taking everything in. And what have been some of the moments that have stood out to you so far, you know, particularly in this game tonight, that you're going to take with you?
I think every game is a great learning experience. My coach from Maine had a great quote: "You can't buy experience at Target," and that's what I'm doing right now. I'm learning every day, whether it's practice or at the hotel or traveling or in a game. So, I mean, today, a great memory is going to be, you know, getting that win in a different building and, you know, getting the 2 points that are super important. So, again, it's hard not to enjoy that. And, yeah, I'm going to have a smile on my face the whole time.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Brad Marchand right now, because to me, he has been the MVP of this hockey club this year. When they needed a big goal, he's gotten that. When they needed a spark on the energy side, he's given them that. I talked a little bit about that with Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy. Hey, Butchie, why don't I ask you about Marshy in kind of an historical type of context? I was thinking about, you know, the hat trick the other day, but also being, you know, the emotional leader and getting in on the forecheck, creating opportunities and kind of as an agitator in circumstances as well. How rare and how difficult is, you know, it to be Marshy and play at the high level he does, drawing the attention that he does, stirring the pot and also producing on a skill level from an historical perspective?
Well, listen, he's a high energy guy. That's why he's able to do it. Marshy, very rarely in my tenure here, or even in Providence for that matter, did this kid come into the rink not in a good place, not wanting to be there, you know, again, wanting to work at his craft and get better. So that's the first thing. He has a positive mindset, and he's a very energetic guy and understands that work ethic is the driver for him. He knows he's got talent. He's worked hard on that talent to make it better, but he also knows that he needs the work ethic. He's not a natural, let's say, that maybe some of the other guys are. So he's come in and now he looks like one of those guys, right? So, but it's been, to me, through all hard work and effort and being a student of the game. And that's the other area. I think he's gotten a lot more attention to detail of other teams and plays and on the ice, what situations you can make plays, what you can't. And he's worked on that part of his game too. So it takes a lot of pride in everything he does. And as for the instigating, that's just who he is. He hasn't lost that, but he's stayed on the right side of the law, so to speak, when it does come to that. And as I said, I think guys feed off that. I don't think anybody enjoys playing against him, knowing that, you know, he's a buzzsaw out there and he can embarrass you one-on-one. So there's a lot of different ways he can beat you, Brad. And I think that's the best part of his game. He can beat you with speed, skill, tenacity, smack talk, and gets on some guys. So there's a lot of different elements to Brad, a lot of layers there. He plays in all situations, has a good mind in terms of getting right back up if he does get knocked down. So he never really loses his confidence. If he does, it's only for a short period of time. So a lot of positive qualities there to help you be a good player every night, knowing that you're a marked man as well. He always sees real good lines, checking lines, guys that want to get him off his game, want to be physical against him. So just credit to him for having the mental toughness, I guess, too. That would be the biggest thing at the end of the day, to battle through all of those things and be a good player every night.
Also talked with new Bruins captain Patrice Bergeron about the culture and identity of this year's team. Hey, Bergie, want to ask you about the identity of this group. Do you feel that the identity has shifted at all from previous years, or have players who've taken on bigger roles or new acquisitions come in and kind of support of, you know, the core group?
To me, the identity, the culture of this team hasn't changed in a while. I mean, we're trying to bring in some character guys that are playing for the team and agreeing to their role, whatever that is, and buying in. Also, we're the type of team, I think, that kind of, relies on everybody. And I think it's even more so this year with the challenges that we're facing with COVID and whatnot and injuries. So, no, I don't think it changes. I think, it's about hard skill. We've said that before. We're a team that has some skill but needs to play hard and compete every night to be successful.
So let's get to the Boston Celtics now here. And the Celtics have had a inconsistent season, one where they have a huge win followed by a huge loss. And that cycle has continued pretty much throughout the course of the year, thus a 500 record for the Boston Celtics. What's been consistent, though, is the high-level play of Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They have emerged as young superstars in the league, but their success has not been followed by team success, which has then called into question their leadership ability. And Brad Stevens talked with me about that. Hey, Brad, wanted to ask you a little bit about Jason and Jaylen's leadership skills throughout the course of this year, and how have they been challenged in this adversity, in your view, and how have they dealt with that as they've emerged into this newer role as leaders of the group?
I just think the biggest thing that the takeaway is that they're doing a great job for the age and stage they're at. This is a when you're as talented as they are, when you carry the burden that they do from the standpoint, it's a good one, of a person that people look towards, then, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. The first thing that you have to do is you have to set an example with your work ethic and your play. And then the second thing you have to do is you have to be accountable and be a good teammate. And like, they're all that. Are they as good of leaders as they will be in 4 years? No. But that's not, that's what we want. We want them to grow and continue to grow and find that when they hit their prime, find that as well. But they're doing a really good job for this age. And I think part of leading when you're at that age is also understanding that you don't know everything you're going through, right? Like, it's new. And they're both great. They are easy to coach. They're easy to approach. They are, more than open to grow. And so I think they're doing a great job. And I think that they can learn a lot from some of the other guys on the team, most notably Kimba. And I think that that's also been really good.
Talked with Jaylen Brown about what this 2021 season has encompassed.
Hey, Jaylen, how would you go about defining what the season has been like for you personally, where you've had great individual strides that have been taken in regards to your game, but from the team standpoint, there's been fits and starts? How challenging has the season been from a mental perspective, and how would you define what it's been like for you personally?
It's been very challenging. I think this is an unorthodox year that, not just us as NBA players, but everybody in the world is kind of maneuvering through. We're just trying to, find what works best. And in terms of me here, it's been ups and downs. I'm not a person that, complains. I kind of just do what needs to be done. So that's the only thing I really could say around it. But it's definitely been challenging.
Individual just has not hit his stride at all this year has been Kemba Walker.
Hey, Kemba, just how frustrated do you feel at this point in time where it feels like things are building in the right direction? And Evan goes into the COVID protocol today, and it just seems like that's kind of been the story this year. Is there frustration, and how do you kind of move beyond that?
I mean, look at the circumstances we're under, at the end of the day, you just have to adjust. You have to adapt. It's like this for everyone. It's tough. It's a hard year. It's been a very, very tough year for everybody, you just gotta try to find a way, man. That's all you can do. When guys go down, you gotta expect guys to kind of step their games up and, help other guys, play better. Things like that, it's just been a tough year overall for everyone. So, we're not secluded. We're not alone in that.
Kemba Walker after Tuesday night's loss to the Sixers. I am Chris Ryan. Thanks for joining me for the Press Pass. Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Let's get to the Boston Bruins right now. They have had two significant wins in a row and have won three out of their last four and have taken points in four out of their last four contests. So the Boston Bruins have been playing really good hockey over the last week and have done so as guys continue to come in and out of the lineup. Jeremy Swayman, the rookie netminder, we're going to hear about him in just a minute. We heard from him earlier in the show from Bruce Cassidy, but he has been really good and he has stood out. He's 22 years of age and appears to have, you know, the skills to compete and potentially be really good at this level, but it has only been two games. Boston Bruins right now in the East Division. They sit in the fourth spot. They have 48 points. They are six behind the Pittsburgh Penguins at this point, but they have four games in hand. They played four fewer games than Pittsburgh. They are eight behind the Washington Capitals, but have played four fewer games than them as well. So the Bruins, if they win those four games they have in hand, and many are against the lowly Buffalo Sabres, they're right there in the conversation to be at the top of the Eastern Division. I talked with Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy about a couple things. A, as we get closer to the playoffs, does he have as much of a feel as he would want for line combinations and forwards given the fluctuation of the lineup? And also asked him about Swayman and the debut he's had in net. He's expected to start again today against the Philadelphia Flyers in Philly.
Hey, Bruce, two things if I can. There's been a lot of discussion about Swayman and his type of debut that he had the other night. And, you know, how impressive was it to you, A, and B, you know, can you make long-term projections about an individual, you know, that quickly into their run?
Well, I won't. With goalies, I think the goalie department guys that work with them every day have a better idea of control, rebound control, technique-wise, out of square, all these terms they use. To, you know, see how guys can, how fast they can progress to recover for the second shot a lot of times. So I just know what I saw the other day was a guy that was athletic, composed, but yet he still challenged quite a bit. Didn't give up a lot of rebounds. Pucks were sticking to him. He was tracking it well. So obviously a great debut for him. You can't fault him on either goal. And I had heard his puck play was, you know, something that he didn't use as much in college as maybe some other goals. And I thought it was fine. I thought he got out to the ones he should, you know, moved it over to the appropriate place or played it hard around. So I liked everything I saw, but I can't project down the road. Let's get a few games under his belt. See where it goes. It's a tough position. We saw that with the guy we played against the other night, Carter Hart, who's had his shares up and downs and came in, you know, highly touted. So you hate to do that right away, but he's going in tonight. He's earned another start. Let's see what he's got.
You're always trying to find the best combinations up front and on the back end. I'm curious, though, in this year, given all the changes we've seen, are you less or more where you want to be at this point in the season in having a feel for what you want to do on a night-in, night-out basis?
Well, we're away from our back end, that's for sure. We wanted the way we started. We wanted Lauzon growing his game, playing beside a McAvoy. Grizz, I thought, would be a good puck mover for whether it was Miller or Carlo. We had him with Carlo. And then Zboril as a young guy with Miller. You know, we thought we had good balance in our back end. And we had, you know, Johnny Moore and Clifton as our 7 and 8. So obviously we're down Carlo, McAvoy now. Millsy missed a lot of time. Johnny had surgery. So it's hard to say that we're at where we want to be in terms of our pairs just because of injury. So we're trying to sort of reconfigure on the fly here what we think is best from night to night. We've used Grizz with Charlie, loaded up one pair, separated them at times as well. So, and as for up front, I think the question mark early on was, where was Richie going to best fit? He's found a home with Krejci. You know, he's moved with Coyle at training camp, but I think he's been good with Krejci. And we toggle pasta between the first and second line. Some of that depended on Smitty and obviously Kasha. So Kasha's out. So no, we haven't, you know, kind of drilled down on that quite yet. I think Smitty's done a good job in the top line. He's given Carson Kuhlman and Senishin, some of the younger guys, an opportunity to play. Jake's injuries, of course, have taken us out of a bit of a rhythm there where he best fits. So unfortunately, just the injuries do that to you. Every team goes through it. Just seems like this year for us, it's a little more than, than we typically a team would go through, but we're working at it. It's allowed other guys some opportunities to get in the lineup on a regular basis. And like I said, hopefully we find the right mix and stay healthy and get healthy and can use all the assets to figure it out.
Also talked with the Bruins' Sean Corrali. Again, a little more on Brad Marchand, who in my view should be in the conversation for the Hart Trophy for the MVP of the National Hockey League this year, considering the type of three-zone player he is. There's guys with better statistics, but they're basically one-zone players, offensive zone, and that is it. Talking about the guys out in Edmonton, McDavid and Draisaitl. So let's hear a little bit about from Sean Corrali on Brad Marchand.
Hey, Sean. Wanted to get your perspective on how hard it is to play Brad's game at the level that he does, to draw the attention of the opposition, to create energy, and then be one of the highest end skill players in the league. What is your level of appreciation for him, particularly given the type of player that you are, that he is able to dominate the league while drawing attention and creating energy consistently?
Yeah, he's obviously, Chris, found a way to be top notch. I mean, there's maybe a handful of guys that are doing what he's doing, and I think he's the best at what he's doing, no question. How does he do it? I think he's just got it in him. He's a fiery guy. He plays hard, and he loves to compete. I think that's kind of the biggest thing for him is he's just naturally, and he's got God-given talent with a work ethic that I think. You know, everyone around our team, when you've got your best players working like that and playing hard and getting inside, and he gets to the hard areas of the ice, uses his size so well to, you know, if someone's got a good reach, he gets right into their chest and you can't get the puck from him. So I think he just does it. I mean, it's a laundry list of things that Marshy does well. But like we've talked about a couple of times in this interview, we've got a lot of good players that are fun to watch and, easy to learn from and easy to follow.
And on his leadership as well, everyone talks about Berge, and rightfully so, as the captain of the team and the role he's had for so many years. But in what ways does Brad either complement what Berge does or, you know, perhaps even have different areas of strength?
Yeah, you can obviously see their games and even personalities seem to complement each other really well. However it works, it's just, sometimes it just works. I think, you know, what we've said, Marshy brings and Berge brings, they're two different things. And I think they both lean on each other, at different times. And, it's obviously a beneficial, relationship for both of them and how they play and their styles of game. They just seem to really work together really well.
More on the Bruins and what I thought was a win that spurred them moving forward into success against the Pittsburgh Penguins last Saturday, coming up in the next segment of the Press Pass. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Red Sox, of course, started the season with a three-game sweep at Fenway at the hands of the Baltimore Orioles, and some vultures were already circling around the Boston Red Sox at that point in time, despite the feeling that this was going to be a pretty good competitive team. When you given the lineup, given the pitching staff, you know, you assume that over a 162 game season they're going to turn things around. That being said, there was a lot of concern about the team from the outside. And after that three game sweep, I talked with Red Sox manager Alex Cora. Sox have subsequently won four straight games, including a sweep against the Tampa Bay Rays, and are now atop the AL East. Very early in the year, seven games in, at 4-3 as they take on Baltimore today.
How do you have guys not kind of focus on this from, you know, a microscope type of perspective, because it is three games at the beginning of the year, and kind of turn the page, because obviously this is in August, it might be a little bit different, but first three games, feeling that things might change going into the season after last year, etc.
I do believe that, you know, it's still three games, right? But obviously, you look around and you see the numbers. You don't see numbers with certain, with some of them. You look at the scoreboard. You go. You do look at the standings. There's no wins, you know. And that's not only the players. It's the coaching staff. Everybody, you know. We know where we at. You know, it wasn't a good weekend. But at the end of the day, you know, it's only three games, and you know, we have a chance to come tomorrow and do it again, you know, and we have to be better. And like I said, you know, we have stuff to work on. We still feel, you know, I still feel the same way about the team 5 days ago than right now. We have a good team, but we still have to work and work for our stuff, you know, and simplify stuff, go the other way a little bit. You saw Christian today, you got a few hits the other way. Just get yours, you know, get your singles, you know, get the line moving, and then maybe big things happen. As an offense, I do believe we got to control the strike zone. We expanded a lot, you know, the 3 days, you know, we were chasing pitches. We barely walk over the weekend. So that's something that as a unit, we have to do it. And if we start with that, the offense is going to start clicking.
Player I've been really impressed with is Marwin Gonzalez. He literally plays everywhere on the diamond except for pitcher and catcher. And he has a really solid approach. And this is something that I've noticed a lot from the Red Sox, quote unquote, depth players this year. I mean, there are the swing and miss guys, no questions about that, and Hunter Renfroe and Bobby Dalbec and some others. But you look at Kike Hernandez, Marwin Gonzalez, Christian Arroyo, these guys have really good approaches and are difficult at bats, despite the fact that they may hit somewhere between, you know, 250, 270. I talked with Marwin Gonzalez about that.
Marwin, are you at the point where you enjoy the challenge of playing a different position? And does that kind of keep things fresh for you as a veteran player, as you move through your career, getting that, you know, different variable each day?
I kind of enjoy it. Yeah. I kind of enjoy it. How you say, like, whenever you get used to, you get to the point that you just want to be out there and, you know, playing and trying to help the team, you know? So, from my perspective, I just want to be out there and then in the lineup and doing something for the team. You know, it doesn't matter where, but like I kind of enjoy what I'm moving around. I think like the times I got to play in my career, like for like a week straight, just one position, it's kind of weird. I feel weird. That's when I started feeling weird. So it's funny, but that's weird now for me and the guys like Kike too. Like you don't play one position like straight games, and I just like to move around. I can enjoy now.
Can you also describe your mindset as a hitter? I mean, through the course of your career with the Red Sox, you have quality at bats pretty consistently. How significant do you feel that is, and do you sense that that's a theme with, you know, other members of Red Sox this year, the focus on having quality at bats?
Well, I think that's a goal for every hitter, to have a quality at bat. That means that you like you're working and you're doing something, kind of like working hard on the play, and whenever you have quality at bat, like you're gonna have good results. So that's not for sure. Like you can have quality of batting and hit his ball straight to people, like Verdugo was doing the first the last two games before yesterday. And but yeah, like something positive is gonna happen sooner or later when you're having a quality of bat. So I think that everybody in the lineup wants to do that.
That is Marwin Gonzalez. I am Chris Ryan. This is the Press Pass. When we return, we look back at what may have been the win of the year for the Boston Bruins. They beat the Penguins 7-5 in TD Garden. Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak, David Krejci, and Butchie next. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. The Boston Bruins' win of the year came a week ago today against the Pittsburgh Penguins in a matinee at TD Garden. The Bruins in this game fell behind 1-0. Their first period was okay, not great. Then the second period, they came out and were physical. They got the puck behind the netminder, behind the D, and were able to get going. Patrice Bergeron, a goal just 11 seconds in. Then 34 seconds after that, it was David Pastrnak lighting the lamp. Pittsburgh then came back, and they scored two goals and were leading 3-2. But the Bruins then went to work as they scored three goals after that in the third period of play, in the second period of play. Five overall, got a couple more goals late from David Pastrnak as well as Brad Marchand. And Marchand ended up with the hat trick in this contest. He led the way, not just in terms of putting the puck in the net, but as we've talked about today, he's also the emotional leader. He's chirping. He's getting everything going and drawing a tremendous amount of attention to himself and still scoring, and scoring at a very high level. Here's Brad Marchand.
Hey, Brad, how about the commitment you guys had physically in this game, and particularly, you know, your line, you led the way again, kind of in that category. What does it mean to see that coming, you know, to fruition for this group?
Yeah, it's something that we have to do every night, you know, as a group. And I thought that our whole team was committed to putting pucks in deep, winning battles, competing hard. And indeed did a great job competing in our end. They come really hard. They have a great forecheck. They're all over us. So the D did a great job winning battles, getting pucks up, allowed us to give them the forecheck. And that's something that we have to do every single night. You know, that's a hard game to play against. And we need to do that, especially building up towards playoffs. So, you know, all the way through the lineup, guys were committed and did a great job tonight.
Do you have a sense as to who this team is at this point, you know, given the injuries you've had, given the younger core, some of the ebb and flow you've seen through the years? You get close to the playoffs, is there that sense of who this group is and what you're capable of, who you are?
Yeah, you know, we always have, you know, the same identity. We want to be hard to play against every game. Yeah, every year that's a goal of our team. We want to compete hard. We want to play hard. You know, we can score some goals, no question about that. But we just want to be a strong defensive team that competes hard, and we come to work every day. So typically when you have guys that compete and work and are committed, the rest will fall into place, and skill takes over when you get your opportunities. But, you know, that's not where we don't put all our eggs in that basket. We're not the highest skilled team, but we compete, and we expect guys to be accountable and to work hard every single day.
David Pastrnak hadn't scored in a while, and he had been moved to play with David Krejci in this game. They got Pasta going in the second period with the second goal of the game for the Bruins. Here's Pasta.
Hey, Pasta, you guys are obviously so engaged tonight in this game. What's the significance of that and the fact that you played with such emotion and passion?
I think we were just tired of it. You know, we had a tough start and said enough and wanted to come in the second period really hard and just put the puck deep and get our forecheck going, get our legs. You know, 1 o'clock game, sometimes you can't find legs, so it takes a while. And that was our main focus in the second period. You know, we dumped a couple pucks and win them on the forecheck and then got scoring opportunity, and today we capitalize on them, you know. So I think that was a huge part. And how I said, overall, it's a big win, but, you know, we need to refocus and remember how it feels to upcoming and put a couple of great games in a row now.
Also talked with David Krejci about playing with Pasta and kind of focus on getting him going, as Pastrnak ended up with two goals in this game.
Hey, David, do you feel like you guys needed a game like this where you were engaged the way you were emotionally and physically to kind of spur the group to play the type of hockey you know you're capable of?
Well, we definitely needed 2 points. We're trying to build something here. We only have 20 or so games left before playoffs, and it seems like a lot, but it's not. You know, you got to start creating the good habits, play the right way, and keep winning games, you know. So that was a good step in the right direction, and you know, just keep it rolling and get ready for the next one.
Were you mindful of trying to get Pasta going tonight? I mean, is that something that you were thinking of, how you're going to go about doing that, and did you have a plan to try to get him going?
We just play our game, but you know, with him, you can see it in practice. You know, he shoots to score. He shoots with a purpose. So it's just matter of time for him, you know. And I'm happy he got two goals. And like I said again, keep doing the right things the right way. And I'm sure more goals gonna come.
Here's Bruins head coach Bruce Cassidy.
Hey, Bruce, just your thoughts on the emotion that you guys played with tonight and the way you scored some of those goals, the commitment from those players, your top high-end players?
Well, they made plays. They put themselves in position to recover pucks. Not going to go through like every one, but you know, the first one was a working goal. You know, it's a forecheck turnover. You know, we had an ozone faceoff play, Charlie to Marsh. That's just something in the pre-scout that you see sometimes and you try to make that play. We made it the other day from Charlie to Pasta against Jersey, and Blackwood made the save. So sometimes it goes in, sometimes it doesn't. Power play is just, you know, five guys. Marshy comes out of the box, so you're a little bit out of sync in your where your structure is, but we make a play to the open guy. Again, Pasta's goal, the first one I thought was just good ozone, like I said. Get it to the net, make a play, get there, recover. And obviously, the two-on-one's a nice play. We strip a guy in the neutral zone. So a little bit of mix of you know, work ethic goals and a little bit of just high-end talent taking over.
The Bruins have been uneven with results and in performance prior to that. To me, Penguins game, win of the year, 7-5 last Saturday. It's been the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan.